Welcome to WMNF 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. You're listening to the Tuesday Cafe. I'm Sean Canaan. Our guest today is Florida State Representative Ben Diamond from Pinellas County. He's a member of the Florida Legislature. He's also running for the congressional seat currently held by Charlie Crist. Two of the topics we're going to talk about today are bills that he's sponsoring in the Florida Legislature. One of them would ensure access to vote-by-mail ballots for all Floridians. Another would prevent environmental disasters from phosphogypsum stacks. Welcome back to WMNF, Representative Diamond.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be with you today.
Really glad you could join us. So let's talk first about the voting bill that you filed. It's called HB 1217. Its companion in the Senate was filed by Senator Tina Polsky, which is SB 1586. According to your office, one thing that it'll do will improve the state's framework for filing, for filling, that is, legislative vacancies. And that's to ensure that voters are not left without representation when vacancies occur. And this has to do with a current vacancy. So what can you tell us about why you filed that bill?
Right. Well, you know, in our democracy, everybody is entitled to representation. Everybody is entitled to have a voice. And unfortunately, right now we have a governor that is playing politics with the timing of elections in a way that is preventing Floridians from being represented. So this goes back to last year. Congressman Alcee Hastings from South Florida passed away, and there was a very long delay before the governor called an election in that seat. There were about 700,000 Floridians that were impacted by that delay. And then three of my colleagues here in the Florida legislature made the decision to resign to run for Congress for that seat. And the governor then sort of did the same thing. He waited to set those elections over the objections of the local supervisors so that the folks from South Florida that were represented by those two representatives and one state senator now have no voice in Tallahassee at the start of this legislative session. So our legislation does two important things. First, it codifies in Florida law a deadline for the governor to set elections when there is a resignation or a vacancy in the middle of the term. And secondly, I think even more importantly than that, it seeks to reverse some of these changes that were made last year by the legislature to interfere with Floridians' ability to access their vote-by-mail ballot.
So we'll talk more about the vote-by-mail in just a second. I just want to remind people that we're speaking with Florida State Representative Ben Diamond from Pinellas County. He's a Democrat, and so a lot of the things that you mentioned there seem to have a political slant or something. For example, why would the Republican governor want to keep vacancies open? And, you know, a possible answer, if you're going to be cynical, if you're going to think about things in a political way, that it would be to the advantage of the Republican Party for those historically Democratic seats to remain vacant during the state legislative session. So right now, you don't have a full legislature. You're still waiting for those seats to be filled.
That's correct, Sean. And, you know, I think that historically the governor has moved, you know, prior governors have moved very quickly in these instances. And in this situation, whether it's politics or not, I don't think it's right. You know, regardless of your party, you deserve to be represented in this political process in our democratic system. And there's really not enough guardrails in Florida law to prevent this from happening again. So that's the first thing our bill seeks to do.
And the other thing is to simplify, this is according to the bill, to simplify the process by which Floridians may request vote-by-mail ballots. It would amend provisions of last year's SB 90, which has become law, and it would allow Floridians to request a vote-by-mail ballot upon registering to vote and continue voting by mail in all elections without repeated and onerous requests to participate. So this kind of reminds me of how it used to be in Florida before SB 90, and so you want to take at least this part of SB 90 and move it back to where we used to be, where people could really easily vote by mail in Florida.
Right. If anything, you know, what we've learned as we look back at the past elections is that vote by mail works, and Floridians like voting by mail. In my county, in Pinellas County, We had over 60% of our voters in the 2020 election cast their ballot by mail. And of course, we're living through this incredible period where the former president is feeding into this big lie with, you know, sort of crazy misinformation and dishonest rhetoric. And but when you actually talk to the supervisors of elections, Sean, when you talk to this Secretary of State, they all say the same thing, which is that the last election we had was the most successful and secure election in the history of Florida. And we should make some very common sense reforms here to make it easier for Floridians to access their vote by mail ballot. And we can do that in a way that I think will further our goal, which is to have more people participate in our democratic process. You know, more people voting is a good thing. And our freedom to vote is fundamental to the success of our democracy. And so I view this as important legislation, and legislation that I hope will help all Florida voters have a fair opportunity to have their voices heard.
And the process by which a bill becomes law in the Florida legislature is that it's first introduced, and so you and Senator Polsky have introduced this law in the House and in the Senate, but then it has to get heard in committees. How is that process going? Has your bill been is it set up for any of these committees?
Well, it was just referred to committees a few days ago, Sean, and so we are working now to sit down with legislative leadership to try to make the case that the reforms we're asking to make really should be embraced by people of all political parties. Because, you know, if you are registering to vote and you're requesting your vote by mail ballot at the time of registration, you're still going through the process to establish yourself as an eligible voter with your supervisor of elections. So we're not short-circuiting any of that. We're just saying once you've established yourself with your supervisor's office as an eligible voter, at that moment, you should be able to request the mail ballot. It's very simple. And same thing with these vacancies in office. You know, there's no reason why we should have hundreds of thousands of Floridians waiting around for months or even a year to have their representative or senator representing them in the political process. So I think they're common sense reforms. My hope is that they're bipartisan and that we can get out of this very dangerous situation we're in right now, where we have political leaders attacking the fundamental instruments of our democratic process, which is how we access the ballot.
Our guest is State Representative Ben Diamond. You're listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. I want to turn now to another bill you're sponsoring, Representative Diamond. In the House, it's HB 1339. In the State Senate, it's SB 1744. It deals with pollution from phosphogypsum stacks. And our listeners probably remember the algae bloom in Tampa Bay that followed the release of thousands of gallons of polluted water from the Piney Point phosphogypsum stack in Manatee County near the Hillsborough line. Before we get to what your bill would do, remind us of what a phosphogypsum stack is and why it might create an environmental disaster like we very nearly saw.
Sure. Well, you know, you summarized it very well. We had a real disaster this past summer. The Piney Point phosphate mine began leaking toxic wastewater, which is produced by the mining process. And you know, there were over 200 million gallons that leaked and flowed into the southern end of Tampa Bay. And 2 months later, there was a massive red tide bloom in the bay. And we live in St. Petersburg, very close to the bay. And the impact of that was enormous. And obviously, red tide is a natural occurrence, Sean, but what happened over this past summer was not. And so that's what led me to start learning about how we are regulating the practice of phosphate mining in this state, which is a very important industry in Florida. But, you know, so is protecting our natural resources and our water in terms of our economic success. We had so many people cancel their trips to Tampa Bay this summer. We have a tourism-based economy, and we just can't afford to continue to ignore the threats to our water quality in this state, which is what led me to want to take action with this legislation.
So what would what would this bill do if it's passed? How would it help to prevent the massive environmental destruction that you're referring to?
Well, I mean, I spent a lot of time working with the Department of Environmental Protection on the legislation, and the Department of Environmental Protection does have a regulatory framework to regulate phosphate gypsum stacks to try to make sure that they're safe and that there's no danger posed to the health, safety, and welfare of Floridians. I just think we need a lot more transparency and a lot more accountability as to how that work is taking place so that all of us can hold both the state agencies in charge of protecting us and those plant owners accountable to make sure that these types of disasters never happen again. So, you know, the bill would basically require DEP to immediately notify Floridians, local governments, county officials of any imminent hazards that exist from these gypsum stacks. But more importantly, it would require DEP to be much more transparent in the way they provide information to the public about how these gypsum stacks are monitored and create a
Representative
assessment
Diamond.
For all the stacks in the state county, or you live in Manatee County, we can use our stacks.
Just so you know, that you are buffering a bit there, and so I'll repeat a little bit of what you said, that there's a system of notification built into your bill so that if there is an imminent hazard, the Florida DEP would have to notify the Florida Division of Emergency Management, County Emergency Management Offices, and the Board of County Commissioners within 24 hours if your bill is passed. And this reminds me a little bit of, seems a lot like a bill from a few years ago in which, when Rick Scott was governor, in which cities were required to report sewage spills because of, you know, we saw when these accidents happened and there was maybe a delay in notification. So is your bill based somewhat on that principle, Representative Diamond?
Well, it's a very similar idea, Sean. I mean, if you have a disaster like this, there needs to be an immediate notification to the county officials involved, to the Floridians who may be impacted. I think DEP tries to do that. I think we should codify that practice in Florida law. But more importantly, we need to provide this risk assessment so that it's easy for us all to understand the level of risk that the different stacks may pose.
And it also would create and maintain an online database that the public could access that would list all the phosphate gypsum stacks in the state by county, along with summaries of inspections, imminent hazards, abatement actions, and material violations. Why is it important to have that information available to the public?
Well, because it's just currently not easily accessible. And I mean, Sean, I'm serving in my sixth year now in the Florida legislature. Before that, I worked for 4 years at a state agency. I'm an attorney. I spent months researching this, and it's very hard to access information about the status of these stacks or to understand what action regulators are taking to access the reports. It shouldn't be that way. You know, we live in the Sunshine State. I believe sunshine is the best disinfectant. We have more transparency in what government is doing. Hopefully, we'll have better results going forward.
And you're the House sponsor of this bill that would, give us more information about these phospho gypsum stacks. What do you make of the fact that the sponsor in the Senate is a Republican, Senator Jeff Brandis?
Well, Senator Brandis and I are friends. We've worked together over the years on a number of bills. And the reality is, you know, Sean, protecting our water, avoiding another disaster like we had at Piney Point, These are not partisan issues. I mean, these are issues that all Floridians, regardless of their party, want to see us take action on. And so I purposefully sought out a Senate sponsor from the other party because we want to send a message that, you know, we all care about the quality of our water. We all care about protecting our state's natural resources. We all know how important this is. This shouldn't be a partisan issue. This should be something that is about good government, accountability, and we need to get this done for the people that we serve.
Our guest is State Representative Ben Diamond from Pinellas County. He's also running for the congressional seat that's currently held by Charlie Crist. So far, we've talked about two bills he's introducing, one that has to do with voting and the other that has to do with protecting the environment. But I just also want to mention, you know, ask you about, in general, what's happening up there in Tallahassee. The Florida legislative session is underway. It'll last 2 months. We already have 1 week behind us. There's two main things that the legislature has to do, and that is pass a budget, and it also has to draw new district lines based on the new census data from 2020. Let's talk about redistricting first. How does that look? There's been some criticism that it's not happening out in the open as much as necessary, but what's your feeling about the process so far?
Well, I'm always in favor of more interaction and as much transparency and as much feedback as we can get. I know in prior redistricting cycles, the redistricting committee has even toured the state to get input from Floridians about how the map should be drawn. But the basic premise is that the voters should be able to select their representatives. We don't select our voters, you know, and we'll have to see how this all shakes out. I mean, we have some very important constitutional protections to guarantee fair districts in Florida. And that means districts that are designed without the intent to favor or disfavor a political party, but designed to be fair and to let voters choose their representatives. And that's the constitutional requirement. And that's certainly my goal in reviewing any map, is to make sure that the map meets those requirements.
Also a hot topic this week and in the last week in Tallahassee has been abortion access. There, of course, across the country, there have been some new laws that are getting reviewed by the Supreme Court, and Florida is no different. It's also maybe perhaps looking to the Republican leadership in the state Senate and House are perhaps looking to chip away at abortion access. So what's happened so far in the Tallahassee during the legislative session, and what do you think that might actually come of it?
Well, unfortunately, there have been bills filed already in the legislature that would push different types of abortion bans. One bill, HB 5, will be heard in its first committee tomorrow afternoon, which would implement a 15-week abortion ban in Florida. And one of my absolute top priorities this session is to fight back against legislation like this, Sean, which infringes on Floridians' fundamental freedoms. You know, our state constitution recognizes that all of us have a right to privacy, and those privacy rights have protected Floridians' rights to access reproductive health care for decades. And we can't just sit by while those privacy rights are trampled by an extreme agenda up here. So I've actually filed another bill called the Reproductive Health Care Protection Act to guarantee a person's right to access reproductive health care. You know, everybody in this state has the right to have children, not have children, the right to raise their children in a safe and healthy environment. And we've got to work very hard this session to see that Florida doesn't go down the path of some of these other extreme legislatures in adopting a bill like HB 5.
Our guest is State Representative Ben Diamond from St. Petersburg, and we're talking about the Florida legislative session right now. What about any gun bills that are going to be heard this session in Tallahassee? Is there any you know, that we've heard that maybe an open carry bill might be considered, like in Texas, like Texas's bill. What about gun safety?
So I haven't seen any of those yet. I serve on the House Judiciary Committee. Those bills are usually heard in our committee. Unfortunately, the legislature has already made a mess of gun safety in this state. We have one of the worst things we've done is preempted cities from enacting their own ordinances to address this challenge. And if we did nothing else, I'd love to see us reverse that. You know, in the city of St. Petersburg, we've had a very tough several months of gun violence, and the city officials' hands are really tied because the legislature has preempted their ability to respond, and that's not right. So fortunately, so far, I haven't seen any of those bills like the open carry bill, Sean, on my agenda in the Judiciary Committee. But you're right. I mean, every session there's some attempt to further erode our ability to keep Floridians safe.
And local preemption doesn't end with just gun bills. There's also, you know, there have been a slew in the last few years of bills where the state legislature will say to local governments that they can't regulate sunscreen, or they can't, you know, you name it. There's been a whole bunch. What do you think the next frontal attack is there on local rights from Tallahassee?
Well, there's a bill that I just heard last week that I think is very concerning that would really hamstring local government's ability to enact any ordinance that may impact business. And, you know, the way it's written, a business could bring a lawsuit against the local government, and whether the lawsuit was frivolous or not, it would basically shut down the local government's ability to enforce its ordinances. And the reality is we have people serving in local governments all across the state that really care about the success of our small businesses. I mean, we all want to have a thriving downtown. We all want to have a great Main Street. In St. Pete, where I live, I saw our city council bend over backwards and do a lot of creative things as we were living through the pandemic to try to help our local restaurants in terms of enacting new ordinances so that people could sit outside and eat on the sidewalks. And, you know, a lot of these bills come from this sort of false premise that local governments are hostile to small businesses. In fact, you know, we're all working together to try to figure out how we can build an even stronger business community and have our downtowns really thrive.
Our guest is State Representative Ben Diamond from Pinellas County. You're listening to Tuesday Cafe on WMNF Tampa. And as we wrap up, let's, you know, one last thing maybe I should ask you about is there's been some talk about the legislature giving a pool of money to the governor to use in an emergency. You know, there are some things about that that certainly sound like, you know, of course, during an emergency, maybe it's good to have a pool of money sitting out there. But there probably is a downside as well that maybe you could help us understand. What are the pros and cons of having an emergency pool that's accessible by the governor without really much oversight?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, the first issue is a constitutional issue. I mean, we, the legislators, have the constitutional responsibility to appropriate money and to decide how taxpayer dollars are spent, not the governor. And I just don't agree with the idea that this governor or any governor should get a blank check in deciding how taxpayer dollars are spent. We have a Department of Emergency Management. We have agencies that can respond to emergency situations. We have mechanisms within the legislature to meet through a budget commission to make appropriations quickly. But we shouldn't just, as a legislature, you know, wave the white flag and say we're handing over our constitutional responsibility of deciding how to spend money to the governor. I mean, we have a big role to play here, and I'm candidly shocked that my colleagues over the past few years, regardless of the fact that, you know, their governor is, that the governor is in their same party, are willing to just cede that responsibility to his office. I mean, this is what we got elected to do, as you said, Sean, is to make the decisions about how to spend this money and how to do it in the most effective way for Floridians. And the last thing we should be doing is writing the governor a blank check.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on WMNF's Tuesday Cafe today, Representative Diamond.
Thanks, Sean. Really enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks. I appreciate you coming on. State Representative Ben Diamond is from Pinellas County. He's also running for the congressional seat that's currently held by Charlie Crist. If you have anything that you'd like to weigh in on about the Florida legislature, give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. We're going to be right back. I'm going to play a short music break, and then we'll hear more from the Florida legislature on WMNF Tampa.
Signs of poetry in the golden litter and the 10-foot shining
back to the WMNF Tampa Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. And thanks so much for our guest, Representative Ben Diamond from Pinellas County, from St. Petersburg area. And if you missed any of the interview, it'll be up on our website later this afternoon at WMNF.org. We're going to turn now to the rest of the Florida legislature. Of course, it's been in session for about a week right now. And we touched on a couple of the very important issues with Representative Diamond, but I want to go into a little bit more depth with some of them. We continue to keep an eye on events in the legislature, and what are some of the issues that you're watching? Let us know. You can give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. And that reminds me that Peggy wrote in earlier during the show, said that that Representative Diamond is her state legislature and that she's glad about that. So thanks for that comment, Peggy. And I'll read your comments throughout the show as well. But let's hear reports from Tallahassee about two of the major issues this session, and we'll get your thoughts about them as well: redistricting and abortion rights. And we mentioned both of these when Representative Diamond was on the air with us. A new bill in the Florida legislature would ban most abortions after 15 weeks. Reporter Regan McCarthy says the measure has not yet had a committee hearing, but it already has advocates and lawmakers lining up to fight for their side of the issue. And I want to warn you, there is some strong language in this story about an abortion bill in the Florida legislature from Regan McCarthy.
They titled it Reducing Fetal and Infant Mortality.
That's Jacksonville Democratic Representative Angie Nixon.
When I saw that, I got pissed. You want to know why I got pissed? Because I am a Black mom, right? I am a Black woman. I just had a baby less than 2 years ago. And I realized the risk that Black women have, right? Especially our babies, we suffer from infant mortality 2.3 times more than white babies. And for them to title this bill that way was a huge slap in the face.
Nixon says the bill title is misleading. She says if lawmakers want to address infant mortality in Florida, she has some other ideas.
What they can do is start trusting and believing in Black women when they say they don't feel good when they're going to the doctor, right? What they can do is instead of just putting out all these monies and incentives for law enforcement officers to come from out of the state, they can make sure that they're incentivizing more Black doctors. That's what they should be doing. So I'm a little perturbed by what's going on and transpiring here in the state house.
Republicans Representative Aaron Grawl and Senator Kelly Stargell are behind the measure. Stargell has long been a supporter of legislation that reduces access to abortions. She says for her, it's personal. She was 17 when she found out she was pregnant. She's told her story many times on the Senate floor.
I did not want to tell my mother that I was pregnant. Probably the hardest conversation I've ever had with anybody in my life. But I'm so glad I did.
Stargell says she believes life begins at conception. The measure, which prohibits most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy, largely mirrors the abortion restriction in a Mississippi law that is before the U.S. Supreme Court and is widely expected to be upheld. Republicans are hopeful that outcome could pave the way for a change in Florida, where a right to privacy clause in the state constitution has been used to limit abortion restriction before fetal viability. John Stimberger is president of the Florida Family Policy Council, an organization that supports greater abortion regulation. He says the new, more conservative makeup of Florida's Supreme Court could also eventually play a role. He believes there's a chance the state Supreme Court could find the privacy clause does not relate to abortion.
We now have a very clear-thinking, textualist constitution, Florida Supreme Court, and I think that if there is a bill and it's challenged and brought before them, I think that they'll make a correct decision in realizing this was never intended to confer a right to abortion.
Meanwhile, lawmakers and advocates say while a Texas-style abortion bill that prohibits most abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected and allows citizen enforcement through civil suits has been filed in the state, they agree it's unlikely to get traction during this legislative session. I'm Regan McCarthy.
So there's a little bit more about that Florida abortion bill that we were talking about with Representative Diamond on Tuesday Cafe with WMNF Tampa. And that was a report from Regan McCarthy out of Tallahassee. So thanks to Regan for that report. What do you think? 813-239-9663, or you can text us at 813-433-0885, or email dj@wmnf.org. What are the bills that you're most looking forward to passing in Tallahassee, or which bills do you think need to be stopped? What are the issues? What do you think is going to happen with the budget, or especially what about redistricting? Give us a call, 813-239-9663, or text 813-433-0885. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. Let me read this little bit here from Florida Politics about the Senate, the state Senate fast-tracking a bill that would let Governor Ron DeSantis appoint a Department of Environmental Protection head without getting input from the cabinet. And the Florida Politics says this bill could be through the committee process by the end of this week. Two Senate committees could greenlight legislation that would simplify the process for appointing a new secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection. The bill is SB 1658. It's by Senator Aaron Bean. It would remove the requirement to run the new DEP head by the Florida cabinet. That would allow Senate confirmation without cabinet review. And so I'm going to pause here in me reading this and ask you, why do you think that the Senate is so set on not getting cabinet review for the floor for the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection? Is it to you an important position that should be vetted to some degree, at least by the cabinet of the state of Florida? And why do you think that the cabinet is being singled out here for changes? So this bill will be heard in the Environment and Natural Resources this morning. And if all goes well there, it will be heard in the Rules Committee on Thursday. And the Florida Politics goes on to say the bill's timing is no accident. It would streamline the confirmation process for acting Secretary Sean Hamilton. The measure removes the requirement that an appointee to lead the Secretary of Environmental Protection be subject to the concurrence of three members of the cabinet. The bill contemplates no other changes. The Senate would still confirm the governor's appointee. The bill would become effective immediately upon becoming law, which could happen quickly. And here is Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, who is a Democrat looking to challenge DeSantis in this year's gubernatorial contest, taking issue with the timing of the bill when it was filed this month. So that's one more thing out of Tallahassee that we know, thanks to that Florida Politics story about maybe streamlining and making it more quickly to confirm the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection without input from the Florida cabinet. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota. My name is Sean Canaan. This is the Tuesday Cafe. It's 10:40 in the morning. And if you have any input that you'd like to give on any of these bills, give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Well, I also want to bring up the spike in coronavirus cases. Florida reported more than 430,000 new coronavirus cases over the seven-day period that ended on January 13th. And I'm reading here from the Tampa Bay Times, that's an average of more than 61,000 infections a day. That's more than 2% of Florida's total population that was infected in the past week with the coronavirus. And it's the third week in a row that the state has shattered previous infection records. So we're spiking and we continue to go up. The seven-day average of Omicron variant infections is more than double the 25,000 daily average that the Delta wave hit this past summer. The latest tally brings the total number of the state's COVID-19 cases up to nearly 5 million since the pandemic's first cases in Florida were reported 22 months ago, and the state added 470 deaths since the previous report a week ago. That's a 150% higher than the week before. It brings the total statewide, the number of pandemic deaths in Florida to more than 63,000 deaths. So what do you think about that? Have you had the Omicron variants or do you know people? Have you had to isolate? Give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can also email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Let's hear right now, we'll go to the phones and we'll hear from Doug in Clearwater who wants to talk about environmental issues in the Florida legislature. Hi, Doug.
Hey, Sean, thank you. Just a quick comment. Sounds like it's a catch-22 to me. They don't want to do anything about the environment because they want to grow business and bring people down here. But eventually, nobody's going to want to come down here because the environment's going to be dead. I mean, that's really my only comment.
I think I hear what you're saying, that you would think that there should be some sort of balance struck where if there has to be growth, assuming there has to be growth or some sort of upward population trend, that we have to kind of figure out as a state, how do we do it without destroying the environment that brings people here in the first place?
Kind of. I only called because of what your story about the governor being able to, they're going to green light him on letting him choose who the Department of Environmental Protection head is. And you know what he's going to do. I mean, look, we had the spill over the summer from the phosphate plant. And he came down and he was all proud of himself. But, I mean, you know what he's going to do if he gets to choose who he... I mean, bring the Monsanto president in and let him run the Department of Environmental Protection. You know?
Yeah. All right, Doug, thank you. It sounds like you are... I'm reading between the lines, and it sounds like you're kind of frustrated with how the Florida legislature and the Florida governor are acting when it comes to the environment.
Well, 2022 is going to be big, and I don't think the Democrats are doing, I don't know, between Munchkin and Cinnamon, I don't know how they're going to pull it off in the 2022 election or 2024, but we'll see.
All right, Doug, thanks for those thoughts. I appreciate that. Thanks so much for calling in. And if you'd like to join the conversation, it's 813-239-9663. We're talking about the Florida legislature and what might happen. There's certainly a strong environmental bent to this particular program. We've talked about a bill with Representative Ben Diamond that he's introducing to help protect the environment. Our first caller, Doug, was certainly interested in the environment. So if you have some thoughts about how Florida can protect its environment, give us a call. Again, the number is 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org. www.lawmakers.org, and you can send a text to 813-433-0885. You're listening to Tuesday Cafe on 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. And I want to let you know about this alert we just got from the Tampa police. There's a crash at Dale Mabry Highway and Swan Avenue. Both directions of Dale Mabry will be closed as the investigation continues. The accident involved a dump truck in which the driver suffered a medical episode. Tico is also on the scene for a down power line. So you might let us know if you've lost power in South Tampa at Dale Mabry and Swan, but certainly avoid that intersection if you are traveling by vehicle, because both directions of Dale Mabry are closed at Swan Avenue because of that major accident. So thanks to Tampa Police for that alert. And also, I want to read here from Karen in Dunedin. She says, it's disheartening going out in public. People don't care. It's becoming an individual thing. Nobody is thinking of protecting others. I'm losing complete faith in humanity, writes Karen in Dunedin. So thank you for that email. Hopefully, we will restore your faith in humanity somehow, some way, in the next 12 minutes. 813-239-9663. Well, let me also talk about the voting maps. You can call in and weigh on this as well. As we mentioned with Representative Ben Diamond, there is redistricting happening, and the Florida Senate's state and congressional electoral maps are moving to a vote in the Florida Senate. Here's a report from Valerie Crowder out of Tallahassee, who says that voting rights advocates are arguing with lawmakers that they failed to fully account for the state's population growth when drawing those maps that are going to get voted on, especially when it comes to Hispanic voters. So let's listen to that report from Valerie Crowder.
The Senate's congressional plan includes 4 African-American districts and 4 Hispanic districts, meeting the state Supreme Court's benchmarks from 2015. But the state has experienced significant population growth over the last decade, so much that the state added a 28th congressional district. Lawmakers, however, only analyzed the demographics in districts that the court identified as majority-minority districts. Florida League of Women Voters President Cecile Schoon says they should have looked beyond those districts.
They're seemingly saying, we did a functional analysis, we checked on this protected district that was determined by the Florida Supreme Court, and they don't seem to be looking at all to see if there's any other opportunities for minorities to select representatives of their choice. And with all the change in population, it doesn't make sense that they would rely only on protecting the districts that were established in 2015 based on 2010 census.
As part of the state constitution's Fair Districts Amendments, the state's electoral maps must meet a 2-tier requirement. Tier 1 prohibits intentional partisan gerrymandering and requires districts to ensure racial and language minority groups have an equal opportunity to elect candidates of their choice and participate in the political process. Tier 2 standards require that the maps are compact and follow existing political and geographic boundaries, including highways, rivers, and city and county lines. Tier 1 trumps Tier 2. Schoon says the maps were drawn to meet the lesser requirement and then adjusted to meet the higher standards.
So they drew the maps by telling their staff, we want you to build the maps based on Tier 2. Tier 2 is not mandatory. It's the stuff that gives way to Tier 1. So everything you do has to be checked to make sure it's not violating Tier 1, and you're only checking the benchmarks. How are you being sure that Tier 1's not violated in many more districts?
Schoon says public input in the remapping process has been limited. Lawmakers refused to hold town hall meetings across the state to gather public input on the maps, citing concerns about COVID-19. Instead, opportunities for residents to weigh in were limited to speaking at committee hearings and submitting suggestions and draft maps online. Stephen Manguel is with the Latino Justice Coalition. He recently told the Senate committee that Hispanic voters face language barriers due to the absence of translators at committee meetings and the absence of a bilingual state redistricting website.
The process has been inaccessible for public comment by limited English proficient Floridians and the many members of the public impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. The end result has been the dilution of Latino political power.
U.S. Census data shows since 2010, the state's Latino population has grown by more than a third, with 1.4 million Latino residents calling the state home. Manguel explained there should be more language majority-minority districts to account for this growth.
Latino Floridians must have an equal opportunity to elect their candidates of choice and remain politically unified in communities of interest. The Florida's legislature's proposed maps ignore dramatic Latino population growth after the last decade.
Republican redistricting leaders say the process they've employed has generated maps that meet all state and federal requirements. Still, they say they expect legal challenges to the maps when they're approved. After the Senate approves its district, State Attorney General Ashley Moody has 15 days to review the map before it heads to the state Supreme Court. The court has 30 days to give the map the green light. As for the congressional map, the Senate and House must come to an agreement on a plan. After they pass a congressional map, it heads to Governor Ron DeSantis. The goal is to finish the maps well ahead of the candidate qualifying period in mid-June. I'm Valerie Crowder.
Well, thanks to Valerie Crowder out of Tallahassee for that report from about redistricting in the state. And if you have any thoughts, email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. Right now, our phone banks are full, so we're going to try to get to some of these callers. Be patient. I hope to get to all of you before the end of the show. You're listening to Tuesday Cafe on WMNF Tampa. Right now, we're going to go to Carrie, who wants to talk about the environment. What would you like to say, Carrie, in Treasure Island?
Hey, good morning. I just caught the tail end of the show here, and the lady who called in and said, or the email that said she gave up hope. I thought so, too, and I run a beach cleanup down here at Treasure Island. Treasure Island Adopt a Beach. People can find it on Facebook. And I've been doing it for 2 years now. The point is to act locally. I'm seeing a lot of really great things. A lot of people are being educated about the turtles, about cleaning up after themselves. So I do have hope, and I just wanted to spread that word. Thank you.
All right, Carrie, thanks so much for that point. And again, if people want to find out more about your beach cleanup on Treasure Island, where can they go?
It's on Facebook. It's social media-based. It's called Treasure Island Adopt a Beach. Just search that out. And I'll post different cleanups. We work with the city and keep Pinellas beautiful. And people sign up and adopt an area of the beach to claim theirs their own and keep it clean.
All right, great. Thanks so much for that information, Carrie. And thanks for all your work. And if you would like to start your own, you could do that as well. It sounds like Carrie just decided that she wanted to do her thing and did it. So that's another option as well. So thanks so much for that information, Carrie, and for giving us inspiration. And thanks for the call. But let's go now to Daryl in St. Petersburg. Hi, Daryl. What's on your mind?
Yes, I brought this up before, but I see violations of our state constitution environmentally. And so many people seem to have forgotten what's in our state constitution. Article 2, Section 7. There's two sections. I'll just read the first section. Very simple. Natural resources and scenic beauty. It shall be the policy of the state to conserve and protect the natural resources and scenic beauty. Adequate provision shall be made by law for the abatement of air and water pollution and of excessive and unnecessary noise and for the conservation and protection of natural resources. The second part has to do with the Everglades agricultural area, but that first part is applicable to so many things that I see our politicians are violating the highest laws of the state.
You know, that reminds me, I don't want to get too much off topic, but there's also a Florida constitutional provision that says that education must be fully funded in Florida. And so it seems like, sure, it's great to have things in the Constitution, but how are they enforced after they're written into the Constitution? And then it looks like, you know, they might not be doing a great job of enforcing them, like the environment or education spending and so on.
Well, it's amazing that you can, since they work for us, as I pointed out to some people, I said, well, they're employees, we're the employers. So if they can violate the highest laws of our state, then I guess that means that we as the employers, I guess we can violate any law we want to violate, correct? And I see some people get a little befuddled by that concept.
Yeah, well, thanks for bringing that to our attention, Daryl. I appreciate that. It certainly adds to the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again, you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. And Jeff in Tampa writes in, he sends this article from Gary Fineout of Political Florida, and he points out that political observers across Florida were caught off guard Sunday night when Governor Ron DeSantis became the first governor in recent political history to submit a congressional map during the state's redistricting process, which is generally dominated by the Florida legislature. And they go on to say that adding to the intrigue and pushback was that the DeSantis-authored map filed on the eve of Martin Luther King Jr. Day diminishes the weight of black voters. Governors historically do not submit their own maps as part of Florida's redistricting process, instead allowing lawmakers to pass their preferred draft, with the governor having veto power over their congressional plan, over the congressional plans on the back end. And Florida Democratic State Senator Chevron Jones, who is black, said, told this outlet, Politico Florida, the governor clearly believes that he is the kingmaker and can do what he wants, and that's why we're seeing this unprecedented move of him sending this version of what the congressional maps should look like. So it's a little bit of adding to our conversation about redistricting in Florida, courtesy of Politico Florida, and sent to us by Jeff in Tampa. So thank you for that email, Jeff. Let's hear from right now from Flora in Zephyr Hills. Hi, Flora. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking the call. I'm someone who I just wanted to offer a few tips on staying active for the environmental reporting. I think some of the things I've learned over the decades is keep your phone numbers handy. If you see violations of environmental types, have your EPA number handy. Get to know the people at the EPA. Have the other agencies in your phone or on your notepad, whatever, you know, works for you. But I've found over the years of reporting incidents, it's very, very good to circle back, go back and find out what they did. So if you report a spillage or emissions or some kind of dumping violations, go back after you file the initial report and see exactly what the outcome is. Take notes, take photographs, document the date and the time. Those details will help the local agencies protect us all with violations that are occurring, you know, regularly. The other thing is, I think if you have your contact list, too, for your local politicians, if it's safe, stop by, get to know them, say hello, let them know who you are and that you're, you know, hopefully a neutral party who's trying to assist, you know, in violation and being, you know, a good citizen. So I think you need to get to know them. But I think the number one thing I'd like to say is take the time, stop, take photos. Record the date, record the time, contact the EPA, most important, local agencies. Find out who those people are who are going to help us all.
And Flora, since you are, it sounds like you have a lot of this at your fingertips. Are there any numbers that you feel like sharing for local environmental agencies, state agencies, or the EPA?
I wish I could fill you in there, but I work in biology in Pennsylvania, and I'm new in Zephyr Hills, year two down here. So I can't give you those numbers, but believe me, I'm going to be building my list as I settle in here every year and try to pay attention. And WMNF helps me do that. I really appreciate it, but I don't have those numbers. I'm really sorry. If you announce them later, I'll write them down.
All right, Flora, thanks so much, and thanks for keeping us posted. And let us know if you see any stories that we should be covering. You can always email us at newsroom@wmnf.org. And we certainly will cover all sorts of important topics, but especially environmental topics. So thanks, Flora, for letting us know.
Thank you. Stay alert. Stay active. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Flora. And I also want to thank everyone for participating in this show. Thanks to people who called or emailed or texted. I also want to thank my guest, who was State Representative Ben Diamond from St. Petersburg. Thanks to Raina and Lamar for answering our phones today. You've been listening to Tuesday Cafe with Sean Canaan. The show is on every Tuesday morning at 10. And in this time slot tomorrow, Shelley will host Midpoint. But next up, I want to tell you about a special program. We have the very first episode of an exciting new show coming up next after NPR News headlines. Janet and Tom Scherberger host a new show called Wavemakers. You may have heard Wavemakers. Janet did a few episodes during Midpoint in the past, but now it's its own weekly show every Tuesday at 11:06. And their guest today is urban farmer Travis Malloy. That's coming up after NPR headlines. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Lakeland, Zephyr Hills, Dunedin, Bradenton. Thanks so much for listening.